It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If we don't get border security, after many, many years of talk within the United States, I would have no problem doing a shutdown. It's time we had proper border security with a laughing stock of the world.
The shutdown would be very bad news for the country, total disruption. And I think it'd be a very bad idea for Republicans going into.
Do you think it would hand?
I certainly don't like playing shutdown politics. I don't think it'd be helpful, so let's try and avoid it.
Yeah, so you get what's happening. You get the drift. That was President Trump and then Chris Van Hollen, the Democrat, who doesn't think it's a good idea either. And then last but not least, Ron Johnson. The president has had it with Congress and their failure to secure what most Americans, even Democrats, want enforcement, maybe in varying degrees when it comes to adding the Democrats. I'm talking about Democratic voters, not Democratic leaders. Immigration, illegal immigration, is the number one concern of all most Americans polled. It's just amazing. And yet the politicians, and especially the Democrats, have gone off the rails. They've gone off the rails. Sanctuary cities, giving illegals the right to vote, giving them the rights of citizenship, going after ICE. You know, the mayor or the governor in Oregon, refusing to even come and rescue workers in the ICE building, Immigration and Customs Organization, who were being overrun by Antifa protesters, not even coming to their aid. The Democrats have gone off the rails on this, and yet the Republicans refuse to do anything. Let me just read to you an article written by Rachel Bovard. She says, Congress has been busier than usual over the past few weeks as members rush to pass their spending bills before heading home for the August break. Instead of using the appropriations process to enact long-held Republican priorities, push parts of President Trump's agenda, or, you know, show any sign of fiscal sanity, the bills coming out of the House and Senate are billions of dollars above what the Trump administration requested. In most cases, Congress chose to ignore specific requests for funding by the White House, deciding instead to lavish funding on programs that the president's budget sought to eliminate. In addition to blowout spending, the House and Senate, particularly the Senate, go out of their way to avoid fights on border policies, abortion, environmental policies, and so forth. Then she says the House, to its credit, has given it the old college try. She gives a few examples, but she says, naturally, Senate Republicans have not even tried. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has told his conference that Republican policy writers, even those traditionally included in appropriations bills every year, including those supported by President Trump, are poison pills that cannot be considered for fear they will blow up the spending process by diminishing support from Democrats. So the bottom line is, here it is, business as usual, the Republicans doing budgets, appropriations that are the Democrats, on the Democrats' wish list, their wildest dreams, not allowing any of the Republican proposals, including funding the border wall, enforcing immigration laws, none of that. In fact, this is what Mitch McConnell said in response to the president's threat for government shutdown. Let's listen.
Well, the last few years, we've done on a bipartisan basis, and this year, the big issue of how much the government's going to spend and how we're going to pass these bills. So none of that makes any news, Jerry, because it's not very titillating. You know, it's not very exciting to reporters.
Is the funding of the border wall going to wait until after the midterm elections?
Probably, and that's something we do have a disagreement on. And
so Homeland Security won't get funded before the midterms?
Probably not, but most of the government will be covered. And then at the end of the year, if we can't reach an agreement on that, we'll do what's called a continuing resolution for that little portion of the government spending that's left unpassed in individual bills.
So you're not worried about a government shutdown before
the
midterms?
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Well, I don't know. I heard this morning that the president is backing away a little bit I don't know. I mean, what's it going to take to get this Congress, under the leadership of Mitch McConnell and the terrible leadership of Paul Ryan in the House, to do actually what the American people want? You know, we're coming toward the hurtling toward the 2018 midterms. And from all indications, of course, who knows, because we don't trust really what we hear and what we read. I mean, we're honestly, when it comes to which way this vote is going to go, how could we possibly know? And yet the indications from sources that I have some faith in, and they're not certain either, is that Republicans may be in terrible trouble, especially in the House, that they have 50-50 chance of losing it or taking it, depending on which 50 you want to assign to which place. But the truth is this, other polls are showing, McLaughlin did a poll showing that Trump supporters, there were tons of them, you know, in 2016 that were not affiliated with the Republican Party, independents and other affiliations, even Democrats, they're not real crazy and not real fired up because they don't see that they saw President Trump promise things they wanted to see happen, but they don't see a Republican Congress doing anything remotely related to that. So they're not motivated to vote, and they're not coming out to vote. And that, in fact, in some races, I read that as many as 500,000 voters, Trump supporters in certain districts, have not been voting in the midterms, at least the primaries. That's a huge thing. So how are we going to know? And the point is, if the Republicans won't enact any kind of legislation or even fight, they will not fight on anything, then who's motivated to go out and vote for them? Now, I'm not trying to demotivate you, because I probably am, but I don't want to, because I think we have to keep the large picture. If the left wins, it's a Nancy Pelosi speaker, and it is a really disaster, beginning of the reversal of so many good things that have happened under this president. But that's kind of what's happening, and you'll be watching this as it unfolds, as I will be, throughout the day in the next few days, because time is running short, really. Time is running short. Congress won't be the House is already out, and the Senate probably wants to get out. I don't know if they're going to take a break. They said they're going to stay through August. We'll see about that. All right, I want to change the subject because it's important. This is an important subject change. You know, many of you are frustrated with Attorney General Sessions and have asked many times. I get email from you, and we've talked about this a lot because a lot of you know that I've known him personally for a long time. And I've been frustrated too. But the one thing I've been saying repeatedly is that he's doing so many things that you don't really know about. And the other point is that there is no attorney general nominee who could make it through the nomination process in this Senate right now who would even come close to holding the same values that many of us as Christians and conservatives hold. No one. So let me just tell you a few things about what he's been doing. As a matter of fact, excuse me, free speech on college campuses is kind of a problem, you think? The University of Michigan, by the excuse me, the University of Michigan, earlier this year, passed a policy to punish students for making their peers feel offended. And in that particular case, the Justice Department decided to weigh in. As attorney, I'm reading this from Hans von Spakovsky's article in the Daily Signal. As Attorney General Jeff Sessions recently told students at the Turning Point USA High School Leadership Summit in Washington, the University of Michigan has set an improper, quote, limitation on the right of Michigan students to be able to speak, end quote. So last month, the Justice Department filed a state of interest in a lawsuit that seeks to invalidate Michigan's speech code. It is the fourth such document Department of Justice has filed in the last 12 months in an effort to aggressively defend college students' free speech rights. All right, that's just one thing that the Justice Department under General Sessions has done. Now, I want to get to something else more important, because there was an event in Washington yesterday led by Attorney General Sessions. It was a summit on religious liberty, and I want you to hear just a little excerpt of what he had to say, then I'm going to tell you more. Here it is.
A dangerous movement, undetected by many, but real, is now challenging and eroding a great tradition of religious freedom. There can be no doubt. It's no little matter. It must be confronted intellectually and politically and defeated.
Yeah, so he's talking, really, I think, about the SPLC. That's what many people are surmising. The SPLC, of course, has created this hate list. It has made life miserable for groups like the American Family Association, Family Research Council, in which their hate list inspired Floyd Corkins to go in and attempt mass murder on the premises. You remember that. The SPLC has the FBI. I just read this week the FBI is still using the SPLC as their arbiter of who's a hate group. And so this has to stop. And so it looks like the Attorney General is looking into this. But there's more to that task force that I want to tell you about. He's forming an entire religious freedom task force. Yesterday was the Religious Liberty Summit. He's forming a new Religious Liberty Task Force, and he also said that in October of 2017, he issued a memorandum to all executive departments and agencies on federal law protections for religious liberty. This Religious Liberty Memorandum, which the President directed me to issue in Executive Order 13798, explained 20 key principles of religious liberty in U.S. law. And then he talks about how he ordered the Justice Department to do it in every single area of every department, and in all the decisions that they make to factor in our First Amendment freedoms. But I want to read to you, if I can, I have a few minutes left here, I want to read to you more of General Sessions' comments at that conference yesterday. He says, "Let us be frank. A dangerous movement, undetected by many, is now challenging and eroding our great tradition of religious freedom. There can be no doubt. This is no little matter. It must be confronted and defeated. This election, and much that has flowed from it, gives us a rare opportunity to arrest these trends. Such a reversal will not just be done with electoral victories, but by intellectual victories. We have gotten to the point where courts have held that morality cannot be a basis for law, where ministers are fearful to affirm, as they understand it, holy writ from the pulpit, and where one group can actively target religious groups by labeling them a hate group on the basis of their sincerely held religious beliefs. This president and this Department of Justice are determined to protect and even advance this magnificent heritage. Freedom of religion is indeed our first freedom, being the first listed right of our First Amendment. This has been a core American principle from the beginning. It is one of the reasons that this country was settled in the first place. The promise of freedom of conscience brought the Pilgrims to Plymouth, the Catholics to Maryland, the Quakers to Pennsylvania, the Scott Presbyterians to the Middle Colonies, and Roger Williams to Rhode Island. Each one of these groups and others knew what it was like to be hated, persecuted, outnumbered, and discriminated against. Each one knew what it was like to have a majority try to force them to deny their natural right to practice the faith they held dear. Our founders gave religious expression a double protection in the First Amendment. Not only do we possess freedom to exercise our beliefs, but we also enjoy the freedom of speech. Our founders' understanding of and commitment to religious freedom was truly brilliant as well as historic. It arose in large part from the principles delineated in the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom and its effective advocates, Madison and Jefferson. These guys were ferocious. This weekend I was rereading Gary Will's fabulous book, Head and Heart, in which he quotes extensively from the Jefferson Statute, as he refers to it. I commend all of it to you, but one line stood out in particular. That Almighty God hath created the mind free, and manifested his supreme will that free it shall remain by making it altogether unsusceptible of restraint. It goes on and on. It's really a beautiful speech, and I think we're going to put this on our Facebook page so that you can read it. It's Attorney General Sessions' remarks at the Department of Justice's Religious Liberty Summit. My, how things have changed. I remember when the Department of Justice under Bill Clinton started celebrating Gay Pride Month and raising the rainbow, and I remember under Barack Obama when friends of mine were intimidated in positions at the Justice Department and told they must embrace gay marriage. They must affirm it. They had to give money for when they were collecting to give money to babies that were adopted by gay couples. They were forced to do that, and they were warned that don't think we're not listening, even when you stand by the water cooler. That was the Barack Obama Justice Department. Now this is General Jeff Sessions. Quite a difference. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, I'm Will Addison.
And I'm Miki Addison of Airing the Addisons on Urban Family Talk.
Family is so important to everything. I mean, think about it. Right after God created Adam, he made family by creating Eve as his wife.
We'd like to invite you to the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference this summer. We'll have a full slate of experts to help encourage and equip the body of Christ to fight for the restoration of the family.
Our speakers include Ryan Bomberger of the Radiance Foundation, Dr. Clarence Schuler of Building Lasting Relationships, Abraham Hamilton III, Pastor Bert Harper and his wife Jan, and more.
We'll even be there.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference will be Friday and Saturday, August 17th and 18th at Hope Church in Tupelo, Mississippi. Come help us fight back against the enemy's direct attack on marriage and family. That's the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference put on by Urban Family Communications, a division of the American Family Association. You can learn more and register at urbanfamilytalk.com.
Steve Russo with Real Answers.
Sometimes I wonder how some people eat with the same mouth they talk with. It's really bad communication when every other word out of your mouth is trash talk. For some people, it's a way to try to be cool. For others, it's a way to express frustration and anger when it seems like no other words can capture what you're feeling. If you struggle with a foul mouth, you may not want to visit Middleboro, small town just outside of Boston. They have a $20 fine for swearing in public. Officials insist the ordinance isn't intended to censor casual or private conversations, but instead to crack down on profanity used mainly by young adults in public. But the problem is, it's hard to determine what's obscene. The Bible makes it pretty clear, though. But now is the time to get rid of anger, rage, malicious behavior, slander, and dirty language.
For information on books and other resources by Steve Russo, visit the Real Answers website, realanswers.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's big trouble brewing in the state capital of Texas. The Austin Equity Office has recommended the city change its name. Stephen F. Austin, the city's namesake, is known as the father of Texas, but back in the day, he also supported slavery. The Austin Equity Office is saddled with the task of rooting out the city's systemic racism and racial inequity. That means renaming streets and parks named after Confederate War-era notables and tearing down Confederate monuments. Now, longtime listeners of this radio commentary know that I warned you a long time ago this would happen. One day they're renaming school buildings and highways, and before too long, they're going to rename cities. I normally don't say I told you so, but I told you so, and the cultural cleansing is far from over. Just wait until the folks in San Francisco and Los Angeles figure out who their cities are named after. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you, and we just talked about the elections of 2018. Do I probably talk about that every day, don't I? And I gave you some pretty bleak statistics about what we're seeing for conservatives. It is very concerning, and if this 2018 midterm election swings toward the left, it's going to create so many problems for all of us. But the other issue, of course, is voting integrity. And you might recall that right after the president was elected, he formed a commission called the Election Integrity Commission. Do you remember that? It was one of the very first things he did. He appointed to it Chris Kobach, who was the Secretary of State for Kansas, who was well known for his role in trying to clean up voter fraud in the state of Kansas. Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State in Ohio, Hans von Spakovsky, and our next guest, J. Christian Adams, both of them formerly with the Justice Department, experts on voter rights. I've asked Christian to join us this morning for an update on where we are with election integrity. And so, first of all, good morning, Christian. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy.
You know, honestly, Christian, I don't think that we ever discussed publicly, at least on the air, what happened to the Election Integrity Commission, because when we talked privately, there were so many legal entanglements that you really never were able to explain it. Can you now tell us what happened to that commission?
Right. As you know, President Trump appointed an election integrity commission to make recommendations on how to improve the election system, because we all know there's problems with voter fraud. And as soon as the commission was appointed, I was appointed about a year ago, all of the left-wing organizations, the well-funded, crazed fringe, started litigating against the commission, filing federal lawsuits, trying to stymie the commission's work, bog it down with lawyers. And that's exactly what happened. So we had two meetings. The president and the vice president came to the first meeting, and we were starting to look at some really good things, and the litigation just overwhelmed us. We couldn't even send emails to each other. When I would send an email to other commissioners, we knew they would be leaked within a few hours. So it really got ridiculous, and the president pulled the plug because of these left-wing attacks.
And in the midst of that, you know, then the attacks got personal for you, to all of you, to Chris, to Ken Blackwell, to Hans, and to you. In fact, I have in my hand, courtesy of you, a full-page ad that came out, I think, at the New York Times, bought by People for the American Way, with each of your pictures and sort of, well, targeting you and making it personal, shall we say, in the words of Saul Alinsky. What was that all about, Christian?
Right, it's a full-page Sunday New York Times ad attacking, and I now, by the way, Sandy, have it hanging proudly on the wall of my office, because anything that can cause People for the American Way to waste $250,000 is a great trophy, because it doesn't intimidate us. I mean, there might be some people who are afraid to have this to happen to, but I frankly take it as a great compliment. So, but that's what these people are. They're the heirs of a whole bunch of monsters from the 20th century who like to personally attack you for your ideas. I mean, they frankly would like to go further, but so far they can't get away with it. That's just who they are. They're people who rely on untruth and lies to allow lawlessness to prevail in American elections.
Christian, I need to add, I always introduce you with this, but I need to say it again, that when you were at the Justice Department working in the voting section, you were a whistleblower on the new Black Panthers going to polling places and intimidating people from voting or from voting the right way. And the case was brought against them and nearly coming to trial. And when Barack Obama came to power, it was all shut down. And you were the whistleblower, and that's why you left the Justice Department. So I wanted to give your history a little bit on voter rights. So now here's the thing. You founded a new organization, now not so new now, but Public Interest Legal Foundation, and you guys have been working steadily. So I know, just in general, that several states have done some really fine things to reinstitute some voter integrity. Can you give us an idea of what's happened in various states about voter rolls, et cetera?
Well, right. I mean, there's a lot of really good people out there working on this. Delbert Hoseman in Mississippi, Brian Kemp in Georgia, both secretaries of state, Kyle Adroin in Louisiana. I know I'm leaving people out if they're listening. Even John Husted in Ohio, under attack from the left because of implementing an effort to clean up voter rolls. Connie Lawson in Indiana, who was on the commission with me. I know I'm leaving people out. Alabama, Florida. There are people doing good work. And, you know, it's interesting. Brian Kemp just won the Georgia primary for governor, Brian's the Secretary of State, who, you know, enforced voter ID and all sorts of other good efforts to keep the rolls free of non-citizens. Same with Chris Kobach in Kansas. And it looks like he is going to win the Kansas governor's race in the primary, too. So,
wow.
You know, the left can buy these full-page ads, but in the end, it's popular with the American people to have clean elections.
Let's just talk a little bit about some of the specifics still, though, that are troubling that you guys have been uncovering with the Public Interest Legal Foundation. For instance, the one that I know about is that you recently issued a report on foreigners voting in specifically Allegheny County, Pennsylvania. Tell us about that, Christian.
Right. Pennsylvania, you remember Motor Voter 20 years ago made it really easy to register to vote. Well, it also made it really easy for aliens to register to vote because it's an honor system, folks. Here's something you all need to remember from this morning. There is no check on whether or not Americans are actually registering to vote. In other words, all they got to do is mark a box and say, yes, I'm a citizen, you get registered. Well, Pennsylvania was messing this up for 20 years, and aliens were getting on the rolls. And the stories are actually heartbreaking because, you know, they were being pushed to register by DMV officials in Pennsylvania. They call it PennDOT there. And they were getting on the rolls and it was jeopardizing their immigration status. And they were voting. We have letters written to Allegheny County officials begging to be removed from the rolls because they were non-citizens. And some of these people were voting since 1998. And so anybody who tells you that aliens aren't getting on the rolls are lying, because we have the documentary proof of it. You can go read it at our website at Public Interest Legal Foundation. It's called Stealing the Vote. Get it? Steal Pittsburgh. S-T-E-E-L.
Yeah.
And, but there's more. It's happening in New Jersey. It's happening in Virginia. It's happening in Texas. It's happening all over the country because the motor voter system is broken and needs to be fixed.
Well, and then, of course, we have some states that are encouraging illegal immigrants to vote in their elections. I think Maryland, California, I'm not sure other states, but that, how in the world do you, when it comes to, look, they can, I guess, do what they want to do in their own states, but when it comes to federal elections, this affects all of us.
Right, it's a federal felony. You aren't allowed to vote as an alien in any federal elections for Congress or president. But in many places, like in Maryland, Tacoma Park, Maryland, and all the other crazy suburbs around D.C., they've allowed aliens, illegal and legal aliens, to vote in local elections. And it's happening, a movement across the country, San Francisco, New England. And basically what you're seeing, Sandy, here, let me decode it. The advocates want to have a permanent far-left fringe governing these localities, San Francisco and so forth. If you allow aliens to vote, particularly illegal aliens, you completely make the far-left government permanent. It can, and not just Democrat, okay? They're going to be Democrat no matter what. What I'm talking about is hardcore ideological radicalism in city governments when you allow this to happen. That's why they're doing it, because they like hardcore ideological radicalism.
You know, it's almost hard to remember this because of the all we've talked about in the last 2 years is Russian collusion. But I remember there was a huge controversy right up front when President Trump was elected, and he said that the race was close because so many illegal immigrants voted. Was there any ever any quantifier of that, Christian, that you know of? Any way to think about that?
Yeah, that's why they hated the commission so much. That's why the People for the American Way wasted $250,000 on the New York Times ad. Because we were going to get that information. There's ways to get it, but nobody has wanted to get it before because it takes time and effort. And, of course, all of these groups, these so-called election experts, they never want to get it except to say that it doesn't exist. And so what we've done at the Public Interest Legal Foundation is we've started data mining and trying to get records in order to quantify the problem. Now, we can't do it nationwide because we don't have the money for it, but we're doing it in places like Pennsylvania, where we've had to sue the state of Pennsylvania right now in federal court because they're hiding the records from us. They're not giving us the data. We've had to sue Harris County, Texas, which is Houston, largest jurisdiction in the country for elections, I think. We've had to sue them because they won't give us government records that we have a right to get under federal law showing the alien voting. So that's how bad it is you have the election officials who are supposed to be enforcing the law hiding their screw-ups from the public.
Isn't it ironic, I guess this just needs to be stated simply, that all of this obsession with Russia meddling, using that word, meddling with our elections, the inference being that they actually meddled with the numbers, the voting booths, any involvement they had, it sounds to me, was like misinformation or information campaigns in social media. But meanwhile, I'm being very concerned about that, frantic, hysterical about that, while all of this voter fraud is happening, which really can alter and probably has altered. I think, was it Norm Coleman in Minnesota who was defeated by like 500 votes, and it now has been traced after the election to there were enough illegal immigrants voting there that swung that election? Is that the right one?
Well, you're almost there. It's felons. In Minnesota, it's illegal for felons to vote. And Al Franken won that election by a couple hundred votes. And it was later found out, absolutely uncontroverted, that over 1,200 felons illegally voted because they have same-day registration there. In Minnesota, you can just walk into the polls and register to vote and say, I'm here to vote, and cast the ballot. Well, more than 1,200 people cast illegal ballots who were felons, and every single felon that the media talked to said they voted for Al Franken. Well, yeah, that's Al Franken. He's gone. But guess what he got us, Sandy? He got us Obamacare. Al Franken was the deciding vote for Obamacare. So voter fraud, if you think it doesn't make a difference, you're not paying attention to what happened in Minnesota.
Christian, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I have to get to the American Federation of Teachers, who has started this multi-million-dollar campaign to address what they consider the problems with voting, which are the opposite of the way you and I see it. They see it as a way to stop minorities and young people from voting. And explain their campaign, if you could.
Yeah, the teachers union, the AFT, is funding media efforts. That's what makes it particularly sinister, is they're funding reporters. It's not just, you know, get out the vote efforts. They're actually paying reporters to write stories about how any effort to clean up our rolls is the return of Jim Crow, how voter ID is just a plot from the racist past to prevent people from voting. And so the actual unions, the American Federation of Teachers, is spending BUCO money to push this propaganda. But it's not just the teachers' union. It's a whole host of liberal interest groups are actually paying reporters, Sandy. It's called the Media Consortium. If you Google a story I did about this, it says Soros documents reveal efforts to manipulate federal elections. The Soros organizations and left-wing groups are paying bloggers and reporters to write things attacking people like Chris Kobach, attacking people who support election integrity. And so it's much more sinister than just get out the vote drives. It's actually manipulating the public narrative, kind of like what the Russians are accused of doing.
Oh, boy. Well, we always know that the left always is doing what they accuse the right of doing. That's just a standard. We know that. And let me just say that we're going to, that article you referred to, Soros documents reveal efforts, blah, 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 by J. Christian Adams. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can read it and share it. Christian, we're hurtling toward November, whatever, 7th, I think it is, the general election for 2018. Where do you think we stand? Do you feel better about voter integrity than you did a year ago?
A year ago, maybe not, because the commission was still in existence. It's a lot better than 5 years ago. And frankly, Sandy, better than 10 years ago, because when George Bush was president, remember, this was not something that they would publicly talk about, and to the extent they did and got attacked, they would retreat. And this is a president who's shown no signs of retreat. It's one of the most delightful things about, and surprisingly delightful things about the president, is he will fight and he won't give in. And, you know, that's a stark contrast to previous Republican administrations. You know, in the last couple decades. So I feel better about it there. The left is on their heels in a lot of areas, are losing in court. They voter ID has been upheld. Courts have rejected the craziest of theories, particularly the Supreme Court. Thank God for Neil Gorsuch and soon Brett Kavanaugh, who's on the right side of these issues, I should add. So everybody needs to remember Brett Kavanaugh upheld South Carolina voter ID when the left was attacking it. He wrote a marvelous opinion defending election integrity. So, if Trump had not won the election, it would have been a much different landscape.
Well, I didn't know that about Kavanaugh. Of course, there's so much to know about him, and so it's good to have that word. This is off the subject, but within 30 seconds, Christian, the notion that they would go through Brett Kavanaugh's wife's email, subpoena them, how appalled should we be about that?
Well, you should be appalled that if they have the resources to, you know, press this. That's the most frightening thing about what's happening in America, Sandy, is no stone will be left unturned by these monsters. They will subpoena, they will sue, again and again. They will attack, they will buy ads. This is warfare, folks. You need to realize it. This is not something you can divorce yourself from and say these are the things of the earth. This is absolute warfare. That extends into your home and lives and your beliefs. And the Kavanaugh instance is just another one.
Yeah. All right. Christian, always a pleasure. Be safe wherever it is you're traveling. J. Christian Adams, thank you so much, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sandy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. During a TEDx talk at the University of Würzburg in Germany, Professor Mirjam Hain argued that pedophilia is a natural sexual orientation, just like heterosexuality. This coincides with an effort by pedophiles to rebrand themselves as minor attracted persons and secure their place among the LGBTQ identifications. On the heels of the same-sex marriage achievements and the current transgenderism momentum, pedophile groups are arguing that their sexual orientation should also be recognized and granted rights. Ministries like AFA warned about this for years. We're here now.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
The stresses and uncertainty of life often fill us with anxiety and fear. Thanks to Jesus, though, we can live without fear, knowing He's overcome the world. I'm Charles Morris. Won't you join me for the Next Haven today? We're doing a week-long series called Fearless in Jesus.
Haven today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at afr.net.
When you listen to Stacey on the Right, you're going to hear politics, you're going to hear culture, family.
American Family Radio presents Stacey on the Right with Stacey Washington.
The radio program provides an opportunity for us to hear God's word, be empowered, and then go out into our everyday lives and be bold Christians who are not afraid to make changes to bring us back to our moral center.
It's Stacey on the Right, beginning Monday, August 6th at 2 p.m. Central.
You know, people often ask me, Tim, what's your favorite part of the Holy Land Tour? I've been leading Holy Land Tours for many years now. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I learned how to lead these Israel tours from my dad, who started doing them in the 60s. And then he taught me in the 80s and 90s. And now my wife, Allison, and I lead these tours annually to Israel. And we love going because we love seeing people's eyes when they see things such as the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and the Garden Tomb and the Wailing Wall. See all these things for the first time and maybe the last time in many folks' lives, because this is a bucket list trip. We're going to be going in March. If you want a brochure sent to your mailbox, give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. And we'll send you a brochure. If you want to go to the website, everything's there. TWHolyLand.com. TWHolyLand.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Candidate Donald Trump promised to build a wall along our southern border. As president, he's intent on keeping that promise. But he has been blocked at every turn by congressional Democrats and open border Republicans. So, Mr. Trump is prepared once again to take his case to the American people. He says the government will be shut down if Congress doesn't provide the resources required to construct the wall. This could be our last chance to secure the border. If opponents of doing so enlarge their hold on the House and or Senate this fall, not only is the president likely to be impeached, he's sure to be defied on the wall. By making a secure border a voting issue, though, he may not only get the wall funded, he might just turn out enough voters to protect his presidency as well as our country. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The president has said on several occasions that he would like to sit down for an interview with Robert Mueller. But the chances of that happening, according to people we've talked to, are rapidly approaching zero.
Multiple sources tell Fox News that President Trump and his outside legal team are expected to say no to an interview with Robert Mueller. In a phone call to Fox News earlier today, attorney Rudy Giuliani certainly appeared to indicate that.
I'm no on a sit down until we get ironed out exactly what they want to do. Right now, I'm telling him no way. we're not going to do it.
President Trump has gotten markedly more personal in his criticism of the Mueller investigation, tweeting about Mueller's alleged conflicts of interest, including the fact that we had a very nasty and contentious business relationship. That appears to be a reference to a purported 2011 dispute over fees at the Trump golf course outside Washington. While the decision is not yet final and the president does have the ultimate say, sources familiar with the investigation tell Fox News the president's team does not believe Mueller has made a compelling case for an interview, that he has not proven only the president possesses the information he needs. The swirl of scandal around the genesis of the Russia investigation also helped seal the deal.
Thank you very much.
At an East Room news conference with Italy's prime minister today, President Trump wasn't asked about the Mueller interview or the other hot topic of the day, his legal team's vilification of attorney Michael Cohen for taping a conversation with the president about a possible payoff to a Playboy model.
There are innumerable other recordings of other people having nothing to do with the Trump the Trump organization, which will give you an idea of what a scoundrel he was. My opinion of him has turned on a dime when I found out he was a lawyer recording his client. Well, fundamentally, that's a disbarrable offense.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was John Roberts on Fox. And of course, John is, you know, positioning that as though the Trump team is trying to disparage Michael Cohen. But honestly, you know, have you ever been to an attorney or a counselor or a pastor or a priest and poured your heart out with the expectation that it was not being recorded? So it really is. I mean, he is a scoundrel, and that is unethical. And I think most people would agree with that. So it's not exactly an exaggeration. As far as the Mueller investigation is concerned, it really is interesting, isn't it? This is the first, honestly, I've heard about some dispute, personal dispute between Robert Mueller and President Trump on something, dispute over his golf course. And I've yet to hear that really fully explained. But I believe the president because, you know, generally speaking, when he tweets these things out, he's right. You know, he's not making these things up in spite of what the left says. So I think that's interesting. I did know, but not in detail, that I don't know if Mueller volunteered to take over the FBI after Comey was removed. I don't know if somebody sent him in. But President Trump said no. And I guess they had an argument over that, too. So that makes this all very interesting, doesn't it? And, of course, we know that Bob Mueller is very close with James Comey, and he's now, you know, trying to use Donald Trump's tweets against James Comey to prove obstruction of justice. It's just, it's bizarre. It really is bizarre. So now the only trial that I know about that's coming out of this Mueller investigation is the charges against Paul Manafort. And that trial's coming up in the next few days, actually. So Paul Manafort is in solitary confinement, as we've described, I think 23 of 24 hours. Remember, they broke into his home in an early morning raid. His wife was in bed. I mean, it really is appalling. And I think that, you know, from all accounts, Paul Manafort is not exactly an upstanding citizen when it comes to how he handles his money. You know, I'd say he's probably welcome to the club in D.C. There are you can't even imagine how many wealthy people live near and around Washington, D.C., who have made their wealth, whether it's former senators, former secretaries of state. That is the biggest money pot in the universe. And there is so much corruption. Listen, I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying it's kind of like normal behavior. So Paul Manafort, though, is on the wrong side. You know, he worked with Donald Trump, so he is the object of being, you know, in solitary confinement, 23 of 24 hours a day. It's just pretty amazing to me. So the trial is going to start. There will be two trials, one in Virginia and one in the District of Columbia. Let me read to you from a Fox report. Neither the Virginia trial nor Manafort's separate upcoming trial in D.C. directly relate to any alleged collusion between Trump officials and the Russian government or purported Russian disinformation campaigns, a fact that led to a tense courtroom showdown just months ago. The judge in the case, T.S. Ellis III, harshly rebuked members of Mueller's team in a preliminary hearing in May, saying they were pursuing the case against the 69-year-old ex-Trump advisor only as a means to target the president. And this is a quote from Judge Ellis. "You don't really care about Mr. Manafort. You really care about what information Mr. Manafort can give you to lead you to Mr. Trump and an impeachment or whatever." Prosecutor for Bob Mueller, Greg Andres flatly told the judge, "I don't anticipate that a government witness will utter the word Russia." So this has nothing to do with all of the supposed, all the wranglings, the shoutings, the hand wringing, the hair pulling you see on CNN. This has nothing to do with that. It has to do with Paul Manafort's work for the Ukrainian government and allegedly not reporting income. This is what President Trump tweeted yesterday. Is Robert Mueller ever going to release his conflicts of interest with respect to President Trump, including the fact that we had a very nasty and contentious business relationship? I turned him down to head the FBI one day before the appointment as a special counsel, and Comey is his close friend. He's right about all that. The president's right about every bit of that. It's amazing. Now, we don't know if the president will pardon Paul Manafort. We also don't know if the jury will find him guilty or not. I just don't know. But it's not exactly a badge of honor for Bob Mueller, the way he's gone about prosecuting Paul Manafort, whether Manafort's guilty or not. You know, I'll never forget when Jim Baker of the 700 Club, remember Jim and Tammy Faye? Anybody old enough to remember that? They were using their money illegally, enriching themselves, falsely claiming certain things on their broadcast. And of course, there was such animus against Christians in general even then. And so I'll never forget how Jim Baker was put in an orange jumpsuit with chains around his feet and dragged, and you know, his hands cuffed. And he walked into a courtroom like he was some drug kingpin, like he was a mafia boss. It was just amazing. And it wasn't that Jim and Tammy Faye were innocent of fraud or whatever the charge was. It wasn't that. It was that it was a punishment, a public humiliation by the secular forces to denigrate. It wasn't really just. It was way over the line. And that's what this reminds me of. It doesn't mean innocence on their part, but it makes you wonder, you know, how fair the proceedings were in the way they were personally treated. All right, but let's go back to the Russian issue. This is an interesting article. This is from Chuck Ross, the Daily Caller. A judge has ordered Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS was the organization that concocted the tabloid dossier on President Trump. The judge has ordered Fusion GPS to disclose details of its dossier work. And here's the thing. Okay, so when BuzzFeed, they were the first ones to publish this dossier. And how did they get it? Well, we think they got it from Senator John McCain, from his aide, David Kramer. He was a longtime associate. He wasn't an aide. He was a longtime associate of John McCain. He actually flew to London on McCain's behalf to meet Christopher Steele, the British agent who played his part in writing this, or gathering this information, allegedly, tabloid dossier. So then Kramer travels to London, and somehow BuzzFeed ends up with this dossier and publishes it. So what they didn't expect, though, was in the dossier, a Russian was mentioned, a Russian tech executive, who said, none of this is true. This is not true. I have been defamed. And so he is suing Fusion GPS. And I think he's charging BuzzFeed. He's filed charges against BuzzFeed. I don't know if it's defamation. I don't know what it is. But the trial is now unfolding. And as a result of that, the judge then has ordered Fusion GPS to disclose a lot of details about where they got their information and how this all came together. So that's really interesting, isn't it? And then also related to this, remember the name James Wolfe? You know, this is probably one of the most important developments that's come out of all of this. And yet you don't hear this on the daily news. You hardly hear his name. James was the director of security for the Senate Intelligence Committee. Remember, the Senate Intelligence Committee is led by Richard Burr from North Carolina and Mark Warner. He's the vice chairman, the Democrat from Virginia. You might also remember that I have told you that the Senate Intelligence Committee has been called by people that I know and trust the most corrupt entity in government. Not in government, but maybe in the Senate. So James Wolfe, just to remind you, he was having an affair with this young girl reporter, Ali Watkins, and James is, I think, in his 60s. So he gave her, I believe, he's either in his late 50s or 60s, He gave her a copy of that 82-page FISA application, which was just revealed to us, two-thirds redacted, last week. He gave her a copy, which we don't think was redacted, by the way. And this was some time ago. So he has been charged with not for leaking to the press, although I believe he kind of leaked to the press, don't you think? He's being charged with lying to the FBI. I can't explain that to you, but that's a lesser charge. But now here's the deal. In the process of prosecuting James Wolfe, who handled every single stitch of intelligence that the top security clearance, everything that any senator on the highest security list would know, James Wolfe would know. Anything that probably nearly even to the president's level. That's the breach of trust. This man handing all this information, it wasn't just to Ollie Watkins. It wasn't just to her. It was others, too. Talk about a breach of trust. And yet he did that. And, of course, the inference is that these members of this committee, Richard Burr and Mark Warner and others, I don't know. Here's the list. I'll give you the list of the people on this committee. James Risch from Idaho, Marco Rubio of Florida, Susan Collins, Maine, Roy Blunt, Missouri, James Lankford, Oklahoma, Tom Cotton, Arkansas, and John Cornyn of Texas. The Democrats are Dianne Feinstein, California, Ron Wyden, Oregon, Martin Heinrich, New Mexico, Angus King, Maine, Joe Manchin, West Virginia, and Kamala Harris, California. All right, so we don't know to what extent those members of that committee knew anything about James Wolfe, but we do know this. James Wolfe's attorneys now in this legal process, in the process of trying to defend James, have sent a letter to each and every senator on that committee warning them that they may be called as witnesses to testify themselves. It's pretty stunning because, you know, we don't know if it's a threat to them. Like, if you don't defend me, I'm going to reveal what you did. You know, we really don't know, but that's interesting. And that is just James Wolfe, Director of Security for the Senate Intelligence Committee, handing off these documents, top security, to this young girl he was sleeping with, who worked at the time, I think, for the New York Times. She's worked for several outlets. And talk about a breach of trust. This is the kind of thing that's happening in our Senate and in other places, too. This is why the deep state must be cleaned out. I want to play something else for you. This is, I really don't have time to address this. Do I have time? You know what? I'm not going to address it. I just would say this. You heard, of course, that Twitter is shadow banning conservatives. I recognize that most of you don't tweet because Twitter actually has a very good purpose. It can be a very powerful tool for people in media and in the business that I'm in, because you can get the latest information even more quickly than any other source. Plus, you follow people that you trust, and they see things that you don't see, and you get great information very quickly. So it's a very valuable tool. And now Twitter, of course, and this is not new, they're choosing sides. They're restricting information from conservative outlets. And we do need to talk about that, but when I have more time to discuss it. So now lawsuits are being pondered against Twitter because they are a public company. They can't, you know, they operate under the guise of being a free speech outlet. But if they're not, then they may be in trouble. So that's just the mini report of what's happening with that. And of course, Facebook continues to be Facebook, and both of their shares are dropping. That's what's interesting, Twitter and Facebook. Okie dokie, then. That's all I have time to say. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.